Triggered. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, joined us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah.
I'm going to need a minute this morning, okay?
You go ahead and take a minute, as this is the penultimate
boom
Golic and Wingo show.
Nailed it.
And also
nailed it.
The penultimate show to my career on ESPN Radio as well. Right? Did I get that right?
You
Did
nailed
I say
it twice.
All in context?
You nailed penultimate twice and all
and,
that.
And how great is it that we get to talk to all you Notre Dame haters out there?
Oh, man, it's nice.
I am working.
There's one sitting right on this set.
I'm working through some things right now. Notre Dame just gets to do whatever they want.
No.
Whenever they want.
They get.
However they want it.
They get approached to do things. They get
That's
asked.
Fair.
To
That's
do
fair.
Things.
That's
they,
fair.
Last I checked, they didn't have a gun in their hand and forcing anybody to do anything.
We even look. You even heard. We're sharing money.
That's exactly right.
And
leave you some cab fare.
Yeah.
And we need to talk about a world in which Patrick Mahomes is only the fourth best player in the National
Told
Football
you guys. I told you guys 2 years ago.
Get out of here with this.
I told you guys 2 years ago. Why are they making that switch?
But
that
you're really going to bump Alex Smith for the fourth best player in 2020?
We're gonna send that list. Return to sender right now.
All
okay?
I have to say is a little,
get out of here.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But the guys in front of them, any quarterback that are ahead, we won't give it away, though you could probably think of it, are going to go renegotiate now. Say, wait a minute.
Yeah.
We're ahead of the guy that's getting $500 million. So I want to redo my deal.
Can you imagine how hard some GMs are going to laugh when agents actually probably try that for a second?
Let me show you this list. Get out. Get gone.
Can
get
we
what?
Please quit trying to deflect, Trey?
Yeah.
It's Notre Dame talk
that
right now.
That is true.
Give them the news, baby boy.
So Notre Dame pre-2020. Conference, please. We don't need a conference. Notre Dame in 2020. Being in a conference just feels right this year. It just feels right this year. And essentially, that's what happened yesterday when the ACC came out with their plans for the season, which includes a 10-game conference season plus one game out of conference, and Notre Dame is officially, or unofficially, essentially an ACC member this year.
Yeah, the ACC Board of Directors voted that Notre Dame would play that slate of games. They were scheduled to play six conference games already based on their agreement.
They do that every year right now based on the agreement.
Because all other Notre Dame sports are in the ACC. For anyone who is aware of that and only consumes college
football.
Which is weird,
say for hockey, I think they're in the Big Ten, but who knows?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, it's
but
exactly.
For the most part,
they
yeah.
do whatever they want.
Notre Dame's a la carte system of sports. But
I prefer buffet.
But so the ACC Board of Governors voted on that, though. He mentioned the 10-plus-1 model that has become one of those in vogue terms in college football right now for the 10 conference games. Again, Notre Dame is only adding 4 to a slate that they were already going to play in that. And the Board of Directors also voted that Notre Dame would be eligible to play in the ACC Championship this year because of that. It's going to take place in Charlotte either December 12th or December 19th. And then they would also be eligible were they not accepted into the college football playoff for the ACC spot in the Orange Bowl, one of the tie-ins that they've got there for what was formerly a BCS, now a New Year's Six game.
And how it's going to work is they're not going to have the two divisions this year. It's going to be one division of 15 teams, and the two best winning percentages are going to play in the conference championship game. Note here, Clemson and Notre Dame do play this year. They were scheduled to play this year. There was talk, I think, of maybe moving that game closer to the beginning of the season. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not. So they are already scheduled to play. They're going to be considered the top two teams in the conference this year. So, but again, one division, not two divisions, 15 teams. And the money shared in the conference, Notre Dame is sharing their NBC money for their home games. Again, everybody, if you didn't know, which I'm sure most people do, especially the people that like to throw darts at Notre Dame, they're getting money from NBC for their home games, and Notre Dame is splitting that money basically 15 ways with the 15 teams in the ACC.
So, shared equally, by the way.
Equally.
That's a significant thing.
In all honesty, this is a win-win.
Yes,
it really is. For all our joking around about Notre Dame, it's still a monster name out there. it brings in viewers, it brings in revenue, and the revenue is going to get split amongst all the teams now in the ACC. So for this year and how this is working, as long as there are games and we can play, this is a good thing.
And that should be noted that in all of this, the ACC has said, provided the health officials that they consult deem it safe to proceed with all of this, this is the plan that they've got in place for right now. And I think that's important to note. And I think what you said there, when Notre Dame entered in this relationship with the ACC years ago, I always thought it was kind of to prepare for that pie in the sky, major conference realignment, world of super conferences that I think exists somewhere off in the not too distant future in college football. It just happens that all of those same pipelines can lead you to a situation where when something like a pandemic hits, now you've got a conference that we saw. Part of the reason you can have an ACC network is because of that tie-in with a brand like Notre Dame. We certainly saw what it did for some of the road environments. A lot of people point to the Duke game last year, a night primetime game on the ACC network where Duke is packed because Notre Dame is in town. All of these things, in addition to walking in there with the money that you can offer for this season, make it a very mutually beneficial partnership because Notre Dame did need games because of what happened with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten going conference only.
So that's sort of the micro in terms of what's going to happen in the ACC. And the one out-of-conference game has to be played in the home state of the ACC.
And I'll say really quickly, as a Notre Dame person, and Mike, I'm sure you would feel that this way as well, if you don't know the history of Notre Dame Navy, you need to look it up on why Notre Dame said they will play Navy every single year. There's a great history to this game. That could be in jeopardy, just for what Trey was going to say. The plus one is an out-of-conference game, but it has to be played in a home state of an ACC team. So if Notre Dame, they were supposed to open with Navy in Ireland, and it's a Navy home game. It's not going to be in Ireland, so if they play, it was going to be in Maryland, in Annapolis, Maryland. Well, if you play an out-of-conference game, it has to be in the home state of an ACC team. So that would not let that game happen in Maryland, right?
Yes.
Notre Dame couldn't play in Navy in Maryland. So
unless they want to play some sort of history card where Maryland used to be in the ACC, we're grandfathered in here.
The other game that Notre Dame could possibly play is they had Arkansas on the schedule, and that game was supposed to be in Notre Dame. Now we're going to have to wait and hear what's going on, and we'll play some sound about the SEC, but this 10-plus-1 model seems to be the way people are going right now, but it's going to be interesting what happens. And I'm just saying that on a personal note from the Notre Dame Navy traditional game that's been going on that I hope they can find a way to have that.
So that's the sort of interior thought process and discussion just in the ACC alone. But then when you try and extrapolate it out, our Heather Dinich on SportsCenter on how the ACC decision could affect all the other conferences.
Well, let's start with the SEC. And right before we got on the show here, I got a statement from Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. He said he's not about to speculate on anything that might be floating out there. He said, we continue our discussions focused on the return of fall sports, including football. We will announce any decisions at the appropriate time. That's a statement from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. I can tell you that the SEC presidents have a previously scheduled, video conference tomorrow. So everybody's watching that. Big 12 Conference Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me that the Big 12 presidents are going to be meeting on Monday, and they will be presented 4 or 5 different scheduling models. He said, we are going to arm them with all the information they need to make a decision if that's what they want to do.
So we'll see. Will they go conference only? Will they go conference and plus one like this? We still need to hear from, obviously, the Big 12 as well. If they just went conference only, remember, the SEC, I think it was in 2017, spent $45 million on those, hey, come take your whooping and take this check, you know, during the season when you play the smaller teams who get paid a good amount of money, which helps their coffers at their schools, but that would eliminate those games if they went to conference only. So we'll see if they do that or do this conference plus one.
Yeah, and I think Andy Staples pointed this out in an article that he mentioned, but the ACC choosing to do this now is important timeline-wise because as you go forward, now if the SEC decides to go true conference only, they become the, you know, for lack of a better term, the bad guy in this situation who would prevent these in-state rivalries from happening.
Right.
This 10-plus-1 model for being possible and all this, that would be relevant for Notre Dame and that potential Arkansas matchup as well, since those games have to be played again in the home state of the ACC team.
And you heard Heather mention Bob Bowlesby a little later on. We'll play some sound from the Big 12 commissioner about the possibility of, if they have to, doing the thing that is the last chance or last survival route, which would be playing spring football.
Doing the thing in the spring?
Doing. Oh, look at you. I feel like... feel like it's all coming to fruition.
Hot, I'm feeling hot this morning.
All coming to fruition right now.
Wow, look at that.
Cliff's just being nice now.
Rim shots to start the morning. Trey is trying so desperately to get out of this segment. He has been so made so uncomfortable by the privilege afforded to Notre Dame through all of this. He is disgusted.
He still wants to talk about baseball suspensions now.
Searching for a break.
Speaking of that, coming up next, Major League Baseball has finally laid down the hammer in the Astros getting away with everything.
You don't love it, but you will respect it. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. And we have got a suspension coming down involving the Houston Astros, but not directly.
Pouty McPoutface.
That is going to make everyone super duper angry and all this. But first, Dad, someone's taking shots at you on Twitter.
Already?
Because we talked about Notre Dame playing in the ACC this year and splitting their NBC TV money with everyone in the conference evenly 15 ways. And JJ Mills 21 tweets in, where's the crazy money stats of what the 15 schools are all going to get out of this deal from Dad? He's getting lazy in his last couple of days in here. Normally, you would have, you know, Notre Dame gets X amount of money in here, so you divide that up 15 ways, quick math says, and then you would give us the number in there. You have, in our penultimate show, shunned your duties.
The powers that be of Notre Dame, I guess, smartly have decided not to arm me with the information of the amount of money they're making.
Yeah, it sounds like an excuse.
So I don't know the amount of money they're making, but divide it by 15, whatever it is. How about that?
There we go.
Quick Google search. Yeah. Notre Dame deal with NBC. There we go. We got it. We'll figure that out.
Okay.
So as we're dealing with that, Major League Baseball has dealt with the Astros cheating scandal to win a World Series in a way in which allows them to continue to have no repercussions whatsoever, which, hey, at least they're consistent.
So, again, right? Very quickly to go over it, I mean, the reason none of the players got disciplined was the players are the one that basically told the story. Basically, they got immunity and sat down and told all of baseball what happened. If they weren't going to get immunity, they weren't going to do that. So the reason we know everything is because the baseball players were basically told, you guys are going to skate free in this one. Just fill us in on what's going on. So as soon as that happened, as soon as something like this happened, the optics to baseball were going to look absolutely horrific.
Right. And so if you didn't see it the other night, Joe Kelly, the Dodger reliever, threw behind Alex Bregman in one inning with a fastball at about 98 miles an hour. Then a couple innings later, threw a curveball in the vicinity of Carlos Correa's head. And then there was some jawing and all that kind of stuff. And that led to a socially distanced posturing party behind home plate. And Major League Baseball has suspended Joe Kelly for 8 games. And that's significant for a couple of reasons. One, he's a reliever, yes, which means you can use him more than once a week.
Different than a starter.
Absolutely different. Yep, well, and different. 8 games in a 60-game season basically translates to 22 games.
Right.
Essentially missing more than a third of the season going forward because of what he did. So what happened and that penalty is all time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. First of all, here's Tim Kirkjian. Basically, he thinks that baseball got it right.
Baseball's very concerned about this, and it should be, but that's why the suspension was so harsh. Baseball is saying we are not putting up with this because the ramifications of something like this could lead to something really bad, a spread of COVID. So that's why baseball was as harsh as it was, and I frankly don't blame them for the 8 games.
Well, baseball put themselves in a box, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Well, they put themselves in a very tough spot by saying, all right, well, we're not going to punish the players for that reason and all this. But also, Rob Manfred coming out and saying, there's not going to be retribution allowed in this scenario. Yeah. And we talked about this way back when. We said, you're going to be in the uncomfortable position where you suspend players for being, you know, throwing at the team that you didn't do anything to punish in the middle of this cheating scandal. And it wasn't going to go over well in all this. Because when you just siphon it off to what they did as the result, meaning a suspension equal to about 21 or 22 normal games in this, this is what I've been always saying. If you cared at Major League Baseball about curbing people throwing at batters and preventing people from eventually putting you in a terrible spot of something awful happening when you hit one of them in the head where he was throwing and all this, you give them suspensions of this length.
Yeah.
And so I think this is the solution baseball should have been going at with this problem all along. The problem is when you start legislating against the idea of what happened to the Astros, you're in a no-win spot for Major League Baseball, even if I think you're going about this what is finally the right way.
Look, I think we all agree that throwing at someone's head is complete weak sauce. It doesn't make you a tough guy. It makes you kind of a jerk, right? We can all agree with that.
We get the policing when you plunk somebody. And again, not for hitting a home run. He hit a home run off me, so I'm going to hit him next time. That's just stupid. But in their policing, everybody has their own policing. To catch someone in the hip or something like that, or the leg, you know, I guess you understand the policing in different sports.
Right.
Headhunting, no chance.
Right.
No.
But to that point, now the Astros are basically going to walk through the rest of the regular season and nobody's going to do anything because nobody, if you're the Yankees or the Dodgers or some other team that believes they have something massive to play for this season, you can't risk having somebody go out for the next guy would be more than eight games.
Well, and remember, Kelly had a history too.
Yep. Yes.
So that probably added to the eight games. He's going to appeal, and there are those that think it may get dropped down to 3 to 5 games. So we'll see. But he does have a history of this, which could work against him. And you're right, Trey. We all saw this going into the season.
Yeah.
There's going to be retaliation, and the people are going to get in trouble for that, and none of the Astro players ever did. The optics look horrible in this one. You know what adds to it? There was a warning given out in this game. The warning was by the umpires.
Yeah.
The warning was given to the Astros.
Yep.
Not Kelly and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
For all those throws, the curveballs that were close to the head, the fastball behind the head, and then Correa getting close to him, the ump never warned Kelly and the Dodgers.
Correct.
So you wonder, you pointed this out, Mike, if the umps were like, yeah, you know what, you guys are going to get yours for a little bit here. The umps didn't say anything. And then the Astros got the warning, and then now Dusty Baker did get fined, but it was Dave Roberts who got suspended for a game, and Joe Kelly got suspended for 6 games.
You see how the different look at all this stuff.
8 games, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You look at how the different levels look at all this stuff. Everyone on the baseball level goes, yeah, you guys kind of got this coming, and Major League Baseball had to make it clear up top. What would be interesting is if someone tried it again, and it wasn't someone who had history,
right,
and if your team had the wherewithal to stay in the dugout and not go out for the fight portion of this, if it was just the action of throwing, would it be something that would be stomached in a different way in all this?
That's a great point, because we are dealing with this right when the Marlins are dealing with this outbreak, right? Of 17 now players or people in that organization that at this point that have been caught up with. And there's been some changes in baseball about the protocols because of what we're going on with the Marlins. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But just for comparison, remember that fight in baseball a couple years ago when Jose Bautista slid into second with the Rangers and Rougned Odor was there? Odor cold cocked him in the face.
Yes, he did.
Punch in the face. He got suspended 8 games in a 162-game season. That's why this number for Joe Kelly in a 60-game season looks so egregiously long. I agree with you, Mike.
It's going to go down.
It's going to be dropped on appeal. I think baseball wanted to say, we can't have this, guys. See what we did in Miami or what went on with the Marlins. And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Coming up, 2020, when Irish eyes are smiling about the idea of being in a conference. Golgan Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest. Laura Rutledge is with us, ESPN SEC Nation, NFL Live host. You can follow her on Twitter, at Laura Rutledge. Simplicity is always best. Laura, good morning. Thanks for being with us this morning. What's your thoughts on Notre Dame and now officially, unofficially, being part of the ACC for a year?
I love it. If we can figure out some way to get college football in as safely as possible and to have Notre Dame be a big part of that, I love it. And I think, you know, look, the people out there that are like, well, now that this is happening, that's going to be the way it's going to be for the foreseeable future. I don't know about that. I think everyone looks at this year and circles it and says it's a weird year, and that's even a very low-key way to put it. So I think it's great. I would love to see Notre Dame, you know, be back in the college football playoff. And to me, you know, this could be a really nice way to do that, because you're looking at, you know, being part of a conference every single week of the season, whatever that looks like, and being in a good position where, you know, competitive advantage as well as the win percentage and all of the things that they're going to factor in from the college football playoff committee standpoint will really be high.
So, Laura, three of the Power Fives have made their decisions. SEC, there is a meeting today, and for the Big 12, it's on Monday. Would you expect somewhat of the same type of scheduling out of those two conferences at this point?
I think so. And you know, it'll be interesting to see what the Big 12 does. I think the SEC may be similar to the ACC in the way that they try and lay this out. The Big 12 has been, you know, at times they've had a few coaches and even some of their presidents with a little bit more trepidation with the way they've proceeded. And so they're going to be presented with 4 to 5 plans on Monday. Heather Dinich with some great reporting there. And when they look at all those scheduling plans, they'll come up with something, you know, that makes sense for them. I wouldn't be shocked if it's a little bit different from the ACC and SEC, just because that's how they've proceeded so far. So I'm just going off the recent history there. But I mean, it's good to see some schedules out there and something that looks like some college football could be played. I think the main thing, and one of the things that is going to continue to be brought up, I was just talking to an athletic director a couple days ago about this. They're laying this out. They're doing everything they can to try and make this make sense and to try to get toward playing football as quickly as possible in the fall. But the safety is still going to be paramount. It has to be for these student athletes. And that's the way that they're trying to operate here. And when you think about the idea of having these guys, you know, playing football, that's one thing. They haven't welcomed the student body back on campus yet. And I think that's where a lot of athletic directors are concerned.
Laura, and I'm curious with that, because we saw one of the most recent examples that underscores all of the fears that we have when it comes to students being back on campus, and it's what's going on at Rutgers right now. 15 players testing positive there, linked potentially back to what they believe could be an on-campus party in a lot of that. Has that one started to reverberate through college football yet, and college in general yet, as far as coaches, athletic directors looking and seeing that? Michigan State shut down also in the Big Ten right now just for positive tests in their shutting down activity. Is that stuff still kind of looming for a lot of these teams?
Yeah, Colorado State too is another recent example. And I think it is. I mean, I think what you're looking at here is the inability to control, you know, 18 to 21 and 22 year olds in every single moment of their life. And these are not paid athletes. This is not, there's no achievable bubble environment in college sports, and definitely not in college football. And so I think when you look around, I mean, the Rutgers stories have kind of come out. There are so many, and I'm sure you guys know some too, that haven't, you know, reached mainstream yet, but that are just rumors around there. And they are reverberating throughout college football of examples where, you know, guys haven't followed the protocol that the coaching staff would like them to follow. And that, you know, even above that, I mean, the CDC would like them to follow, right? So it's hard to control all of this. And I think there's this, I run into a lot of fans, maybe on social media. Well, that's the only place I'd run into them at this point, being quarantined. But yeah. Anyway, on social media, they're like, man, you know, there are these people that don't want college football. That's absolutely not the case. Everyone wants it so badly, but it's just so incredibly complicated. It's always been the most complicated when it comes to trying to bring sports back.
Talking to Laura Rutledge with us, NFL Live host, SEC Nation host with us here on Golic and Wingo. And I guess that becomes the part. You're right. Obviously, everybody wants it, but no one wants it at the expense of everyone's health and safety. But that's going to take, obviously, buy-in from the student athletes. And we've seen that at certain campuses where it's been successful. That's been the case. I wonder, and seeing this from Major League Baseball and their adjustment to what's gone on with the Marlins, they announced that every team's going to be traveling with a compliance officer who ensures players and staff properly follow the league's protocols. Could we essentially see a chaperone in college football, you think, Laura, on these staffs for some of their players and what goes on?
Yeah, I mean, I think they kind of already have it. It just hasn't been necessarily for this. You'd have to probably get a couple at least for, you know, every team. There's just so many guys and there's so many different, you know, things going on. And maybe, I mean, I think that there are so many things that they're trying to think through here, and every single plan. I mean, you guys have heard Greg Sankey said it to you guys so many times, where they've got all these different plans and then contingency plans on top of that. And those things are part of them. I mean, I have definitely heard that mentioned of, hey, we're going to have a medical advisor is what they would call it. They already are getting advice from medical personnel, but they would have somebody, you know, who really was instructed to monitor the way that people were acting and to make sure people are wearing masks and, you know, all of those things. And then, you know, they are doing incredibly extreme testing every single day. Like these guys can't even, you know, enter facilities without getting temperature checks and all the things that you should be doing. So they're already, those parameters are already already very strictly in place. And I think they would only increase that. I thought one thing that was interesting too, and another part of our college football reporting at ESPN, was the way that the ACC laid out how they would report positive tests to opponents, you know, because that's the other thing here. And that's kind of been part of the baseball situation with the Marlins, you know, okay, did the Phillies test positive? You know, that's where I think people get concerned even more so, is trying to see how can this be contained even amongst a team. And that's not obviously a positive scenario.
Laura Rutledge with us this morning. And then there's the issue of Caleb Farley, the Virginia Tech cornerback, predicted to be a very high draft pick in the 2021 NFL draft. Basically said, not going to play football this season in college because I want to make sure, for health reasons, I'm ready to roll for the NFL, thus being the first to do that. Here is Caleb Farley on why he decided to opt out.
After much consideration with my family, I have decided to opt out of the 2020 college football season and began preparing for the 2021 NFL draft. I am opting out due to uncertain health conditions and regulations and all the other opt-outs going on in football right now. I tragically lost my mother, Robin, January 2nd, 2018, to an illness, and I cannot afford to lose another parent or loved one. Though the competitor in me badly wants to play this season, I cannot ignore what's going on in my heart, and I must make the decision that brings me the most peace. So thank you, Virginia Tech, my coaches, teammates, and anyone else who has supported me in the past. I wish you all the best, and stay safe, and God bless.
We had talked about this when the whole process was going on. Would someone do this? We talked to the father of a top prospect about whether or not he would think about
Patrick
it.
Patrick Surtain, yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Surtain. And apparently this is the first. And, Laura, if we're being honest about it, it's probably not going to be the last guy to do this.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be. And I do think, I mean, you heard what Caleb said about losing his mother, which is a huge part of his decision and the decision that he felt he needed to make for his family. And so I do think, I mean, it's similar to these guys in the NFL that are opting out. They're specific cases to every single person. You know, what's going on in your life that is going to make this not work for you? And that's where I just think everyone needs to extend a lot of understanding there. What's interesting about, you know, just the mechanics of what may happen here, if college football season is pushed back and maybe, I mean, there are models that push it all the way to the spring. And you guys know, I mean, even months ago, we were talking about that on this very show, and it seemed really crazy. Now it doesn't seem quite as crazy. But if that happened and it affected the NFL draft, you know, there are some of these, you know, NFL scouts and teams, the way that they're looking at the draft, I think we could all probably agree, it even influenced the Seahawks getting Jamal Adams. They're looking at the draft thinking, what does the draft even look like? You know, you've got to make decisions almost as if that's going to be affected some way. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys that make a decision just based on that. And the way that affects their NFL stock, you know, could be significant. It could be that they're just having a base things on tape that happened, you know, a year ago or even longer than that. How do guys stay in competitive shape? It's going to be very difficult, but everyone's going to have to, you know, I think sort of adjust around that. And either way, what's really going to be interesting, I mean, look, Caleb Farley is a very nice prospect and I expect him to be a highly drafted player, but what do we look at when maybe a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields? I don't think that's happening yet, but I think that if this thing keeps getting pushed back, it hasn't gotten pushed back yet. If it does get pushed back, I do think that some of these big time prospects are going to have to look at this from their own personal situation and make a decision that makes sense for them.
Laura Rutledge here with us on Golic and Wingo, and I completely agree there. We've seen even the pro levels when you hear, you know, the Ryan Brauns of the world coming out and saying he's not sure if he wants to continue to go or maybe opt out in the middle, that if your team season starts to go sideways and you're a high draft prospect, are you bolting in the middle of this season and preparing for that for your own reasons? And Laura, that kind of actually, you mentioned the spring model, which was interesting. Bob Bowlsby, the Big 12 commissioner, came out and basically talked about the spring model as if it was almost not just a last resort as far as an overall plan, but should things not go well in the fall, maybe a last ditch effort there, an option for these two schools to pick back up and try again in the spring as sort of a second chance in that. From anything you've heard around the SEC, is that the way that more people are starting to view the spring option, not as a plan C to this, but maybe a break if it goes wrong in the fall?
Yeah, look, I think the main key there is that if something goes wrong in the fall, I mean, there are obviously major issues there from the standpoint of health and safety, but it's also that they're trying to get as much financial gain as they possibly can in during a fiscal year or during the year that, you know, would be classified as the 2020-21 school year. And so I think that's where, you know, you might see some games picked up in the spring. I mean, look, let's be honest, it would frankly be bizarre at that point. I think there, that's where you would say, why, if you're Clemson, for instance, why is Trevor Lawrence even playing then? You know, I think that that might be the moment where some of those guys just say, look, we've got to focus on the NFL. And I can't speak for Trevor. I think he would hold on as long as possible to try and keep playing for Clemson. But that is a realistic thing if in maybe a worst case scenario situation where they would have to try and pick it up. The other thing about the spring that I think is interesting and that athletic directors, school presidents have continually said to me over this time is that they are trying to look at how could they have as many fans in the stadiums as safely as possible. Some think, look, by that point, would there be a vaccine? Would it be safer to gather large crowds of people? And maybe that's something that, you know, they would say that's worth it to at least try and wait for that. I think still the plan is trying to start on time, trying to stick to the schedule that has been put out by the ACC and a couple of these other conferences. And we'll see, you know, over the next coming days, how that continues to develop with some of these other conferences as well.
Laura Rutledge joining us, ESPN SEC Nation and the new host of NFL Live. That's getting ready to start up again soon with you hosting that and the new crew there. So let's let you start on this conversation before we continue it. The NFL Network put out their list of top players, and in the top 10, one Patrick Mahomes is number four. It's Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes, Michael Thomas. That's your top five. You get first crack at what you think about Mahomes being number four.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, I'm sure, saw Mahomes tweeting about this himself. I think he's too low at four. What are we doing? I mean, he's got to be higher up than that. I love the fact, I mean, here's the thing. There are so many stars in the NFL right now. It's the way that it always is. So it is kind of hard to sit there and say, oh man, you know, this guy doesn't deserve to be in the top five. There's just no way. I love Aaron Donald. He's dynamic. He's a game wrecker. He is the guy that quarterbacks don't want to see, but yet you can't put him ahead of Patrick Mahomes. I love Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson is the future of the NFL. He's going to continue to improve on his game and continues to get better and better, but I'm not even sure you can put him ahead of Patrick Mahomes. Like, how did they get to that point? So I would rearrange that. I would put Patrick Mahomes number one, and then maybe Lamar Jackson number two. And then from there, you know, you can kind of say, all right, maybe you put Aaron Donald number three, Russell Wilson four, yeah. Right? And then that's a debate too. I mean, I'm not even sure that I would put Aaron Donald ahead of Russell Wilson, but I might. And then sure, I'm good with, you know, Michael Thomas at five, but where's DeAndre Hopkins? Where's Julio Jones? I mean, it's so hard to sit there and say that that list makes a lot of sense. So I think you're going to see it. All these guys got all mad about their Madden rankings recently because players really do care about that. They're going to be mad about this too, which is great. Like, let's keep firing them up. I love it.
Yeah. You know why it's hard to say that list makes sense? Because it doesn't.
No,
it doesn't. It doesn't. I was trying to be nice about it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
I appreciate the way you tried to sort of paint that, but let's be honest, that list, that top 10 is straight trash.
It's a stinky list.
Stinky list.
Yeah. All right, Laura, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Laura.
I appreciate you guys. Big fan of the show.
Thanks, Laura. All right, so here's the top 10. Again, yeah. NFL Network, top 10, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes, Michael Thomas, that's top five. 6 through 10, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Gilmore, Derrick Henry. That's your top 10.
See, we need to have a talk.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, the thing is going to be Patrick Mahomes is the best player in the league.
It's not.
I understand Lamar Jackson won the MVP, and deservedly so. Listen, the year he had was incredible, and it is such a bright future for him. There is absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I'm just amazed, forgetting that he's number, because obviously this is a bunch of different people voting and how it ends up with the votes. And the
I would say it's the players voting who don't actually care about it.
So, I mean, how in the hell can Patrick Mahomes be number four?
There's well, you know my feelings on this. As I referred to him since the third week of his first season starting, it's Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes. I could conceive a world in which you could be comfortable saying Russell Wilson is one and Patrick Mahomes is two. I could live in that world. I don't believe it to be the case, but I could live in that world and not drive myself crazy and want to stab myself in the eye with a pen. Right? I get that. But if you had an honest assessment of all 32 head coaches, including the Ravens head coach, in a blind survey and said, it's just us talking here, just you and me, no one else is in the room, it'll never leave this room. You have one quarterback for a franchise for the next 10 years. Who you taking? All 32 would say Patrick Mahomes.
It would be tough to think they wouldn't.
All 32 would say Patrick Mahomes.
Every single one.
Every single
one of them.
One of them.
Here and now, world without end, amen.
Yeah, like, just ad infinitum, in perpetuity, e pluribus unum, sic semper tyrannis.
So we all agree on that. What's the next thing on the list for either of you of the top 10 that stands out?
By the way, I really have no issue with Aaron Donald being three. I want to be clear about that. I
mean, yeah, no, he belongs right
I
there.
I mean, Aaron Donald is, and I've out before, even with the Mahomes conversation, I think Aaron Donald is better at his position in football than by a larger margin than any player at any other position
would
is
you
better
guys,
by them.
Would you guys knock anybody out of the top five and replace them with somebody?
I might.
You're going to say you'd move Michael Thomas based on the list you put yesterday.
I would move Michael Thomas out.
Yeah, based on that, you guys, you would, again, there's two wide receivers. It's Michael Thomas and DeAndre Hopkins. There is no Julio Jones.
Correct.
In this list at all.
And the other thing is, I don't think I can have a list where you have two running backs in the top 10. This sounds like a list of rewarding players for what they did a year ago, not what they're going to be going into this season, right?
Yeah.
This feels like.
And listen, like, players are voting on this one. Players still like running backs. Like, yeah, that's still a thing there. This is not being voted on how we all value football or, you know, what the analytics community thinks in a lot of this. This is players who, A, you know, like and care about running backs still. And also, again, I can't stress enough, like, while it is fun, I enjoy getting triggered by lists. Yeah. I have found this out about myself is I have an addiction to letting dumb lists make my life a living hell.
Yeah.
That's just who I've become in all of this. That being said, this is not a real list. This is a fairy tale list that is made up by players who do this sort of haphazardly when they vote on all of this, and there's not a lot of thought or care input into it. And so I shouldn't let it affect me. We shouldn't let it affect us. But we're going to, because we're addicts.
Well, again, and kudos, by the way, to the NFL Network for doing the thing that has us all talking about
it. Yeah, we're all talking about
it. I mean, that's the whole point of a list, right? The whole point of a list is to get people's reaction to it. But there are some real flaws here.
Yeah, there's, I mean, some glaring omissions. The one thing I will say that I am thrilled about is seeing Chandler Jones up at 15. Like, getting it feels like in the bizarre universe that is this list, yeah, and everything that goes on in it, that Chandler Jones actually is getting more of his just due for his NFL prowess on this weird, insane, Captain Insano list than he is in actual life, where, yes, we think that logic and reason justifies all the rest of these situations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, while these rankings really mean nothing, these are guys that are going to be out on the field playing. The reality is, I have been stunned. There have been more opt-outs. Nate Solder,
yep,
from the Giants has opted out. Damian Williams from the Kansas City Chiefs. Now two starters, he and
Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Thank you very much. The right guard, you know, New England with multiple starters out. We have over 30. I will continue to say I am surprised. I did not see this many guys opting out. And again, they have until Monday. So they have a few more days.
Is there a time on Monday they have to? I'm not sure.
I do not know.
I'm not sure if it's like a trade. It's like the trade deadline, right, setup where it's like a 4 p.m.
Who knows if it's a hard deadline? I mean, yeah, who knows? I mean, if players are continuing to think about this, I have no idea. But I'm still, again, over 30 and rising now of players saying, I'm not playing this year.
Which makes them having Clyde Edwards-Helaire fall to them at the back end of the first round of the draft. Amazing.
I can say all of his Vegas odds, whether it was for the rushing title, rookie of the year, all these things just skyrocketed. So hopefully you got your money in on Clyde Edwards-Helaire earlier, because now it's become a little tougher.
Yeah, you're going to have to shell out a few more shekels if you want to go down that road. Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Coming up, the NBA, after the hard pause on March 11th, back tonight. So will everyone be ready to go from A, D to Z, as in Zion? We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo. Evan is teasing it today.